Hello, this is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, January 8th, 2025. And again this week, the paper is rather thin, but we'll go on. On the front page, big picture, big headline, Iroquois County Highway 10 at Bales Lake, a treacherous stretch. After two vehicles crashed along the same stretch of County Highway 10 and into Bales Lake in a single year, an undeniable danger exists, yet no guardrails. No longer does Elaine Ann Coleman Lovelace, Paxton Buckley Loda High School senior, drive through Bales Lake using Iroquois County Highway 10 on her way to and from work. Not after the scary crash she experienced in mid-December along that treacherous stretch of two-lane highway, where her vehicle spun out of control on black ice, then bounced off a guardrail and flipped, skidding unobstructed into the lake's frigid waters. The Loda teenager escaped the December 20 crash on County Highway 10, which is also Iroquois County Road 200 North, and is commonly called Bales Lake Road, with no serious physical injuries, only some bumps and scrapes, according to her mother, Amanda Lovelace, but still coping with the trauma of the experience. Avoiding County Highway 10 is a necessary, even if inconvenient, part of it. She's doing well, but the mental impact has really caused a struggle for her, said her mother. Especially the post-traumatic stress of it all. Even before the accident, Lovelace had been worried about her daughter using County Highway 10 as her route between their home in Loda and her daughter's work in nearby Power Planter Incorporated. Almost exactly 1 year earlier, one of Lovelace's friends, 68-year-old Bales Lake resident Steve A. Chapman, drowned after crashing his vehicle into the lake at the same location. Sacramento, California resident Stephen Meeks, a passerby who tried to save Mr. Chapman, said after the December 16, 2023 incident that he hoped the tragedy would be the catalyst that sparks change. Meeks urged for the installation of guardrails along the north and south sides of County Highway 10, where it bisects the lake, yet nothing was ever done. Lovelace is now leading a renewed charge for change. Like Meeks did a year ago, Lovelace recently went to social media to voice her concerns and encourage others to join her in urging the Iroquois County Highway Department to consider installing guardrails along the county highway at the lake where they are lacking. The highway's guardrails end before the edge of the lake, offering no protection for vehicles sliding on ice or losing control, Lovelace said in a recent Facebook post. The current conditions make it a deadly stretch of road during any hazardous conditions. Elaine Ann and I do not want anyone else to experience the traumatic event that could have taken her life, and we are asking for your help. Lovelace encouraged residents in support of her proposal to contact Iroquois County Highway Engineer Alan Harwood to share their concerns and request the topic be placed on the agenda for the next meeting of the County Board's Transportation and Highway Committee at 1:30 p.m. Wednesday, January 8th in Watseka. That stretch of road is really hazardous, Lovelace said. It claimed a life, and then, just literally 1 year later, it could have claimed a second life. And that's just a little too much. Harwood told the Ford County Chronicle last week that he would be open to considering the guardrail proposal and potentially pursuing federal or state funding to cover the project's cost, which he estimated could be around $100,000. It'll be looked into if proposed, Harwood said. I don't have the project in the Highway Department's budget right now, so it's probably going to be something that we would apply to fund through some kind of safety grant that we could get out there. There are safety grants that you could apply for, I believe, for guardrails. Alternatively, The Bales Lake Homeowners Association could take on the guardrail project itself, Harwood noted. I believe they could do it on their own and get the work done by permit, Harwood said. Or it could also be something that the county could apply for and maybe get some kind of safety money or something else done for it. According to Harwood, after Mr. Chapman drowned in the lake in December 2023, former County State's Attorney Jim Devine said it was his opinion that the county is not legally responsible to protect drivers from hazards located off of county right-of-way, such as a lake. Regardless, Loveless, and her daughter included, said the county can and should step up to try to do something. As a single mom, money has been an obstacle for 18 or 19 years, and I've always made it work, Loveless said. So as a county, I think we should be able to find some funding somewhere to make it happen. I think guardrails are a really appropriate thing, added her daughter, still traumatized from her accident. Loveless said the accident happened around 10 a.m. Friday, December 20th, when her daughter, driving her 2013 Hyundai Santa Fe east on County Road 200 North, hit black ice where the road begins its descent before crossing the lake. The sport utility vehicle spun out of control, struck a guardrail, and rolled, landing in the portion of the lake to the south of the highway. Fortunately for Carmen Loveless, she did not panic as she sat in the driver's seat with water nearly up to her shoulders still pouring in through the shattered driver's seat window and elsewhere. I clicked the SOS button on the vehicle's rearview mirror, which called my mom and also opened my vehicle's back hatch, she said, recalling how she was able to unbuckle her seatbelt and just crawl right through. Loveless said she is so thankful that her daughter, who is planning to study nursing at Eastern Illinois University next fall, survived. I'm so thankful that such a horrific moment ended with such a miraculous ending, Loveless said. But there's still a lot of trauma there for both of us, especially her. Getting that phone call from my daughter saying, I've crashed my car and I'm trapped and I'm stuck in Bales Lake, was literally the most horrifying thing I've ever heard in my life. Carmen Loveless, who has replaced her total SUV, said she now avoids using County Highway 10, even though it is the fastest route to and from work. She had just left Power Planter, where she works a couple of mornings a week through PBL High School's ICE program, when the crash, the first in her life, happened. The original drive was about 10 minutes, but now my new route takes me about 20, said Carmen Loveless. No matter what road she takes, driving comes with a lot of anxiety, she said. I can do pretty good if it's a very clear, straight road, nothing unexpected, she said. The rain makes me really nervous, and I just kind of go into a panic, and I can't do it. Turning back to the front page, we have from the Village of Loda, Village asked to respond to allegation of Open Meetings Act violation. Attorney General's office gives Loda officials 7 business days to do so. Loda. The Illinois Attorney General's office is asking Loda officials to formally respond to a request for review filed by the Ford County Chronicle alleging that Village Clerk Regina Tasek violated the state's Open Meeting Act when she instructed trustees to turn off and put away all of their electronic devices, including phones and audio recording equipment, to start the Village Board's December 11th meeting. In a letter emailed Monday to Village President Carol Arsenault and Chronicle publisher Will Brumlevy, Laura Harter, Deputy Bureau Chief for the Attorney General's Public Access Bureau, said the Bureau has determined that further inquiry is warranted. Further evaluate this matter, we request that the Board or its representative provide a written response to this office addressing the allegations, Harter's letter said. Please address whether the Board has prescribed rules governing the right to record open meetings. If so, please provide copies of those rules. Please also provide copies of the December 11, 2024 meeting agenda, minutes in draft form if necessary, and any recordings of the open portion of the meeting, if available. Harter requested the information be provided by the village within 7 working days. As we conduct our review of this matter, we will notify you if we need to review additional records or information, Harter's letter advised. Under the Open Meeting Act, any person may record the proceedings at meetings by tape, film, or other means, with government bodies able to prescribe reasonable rules to govern the right to make such recordings. However, the request for review filed on December 12th by Brumlevy alleges that Tasek violated the law when she instructed all trustees to turn off their electronic devices and remove them from view. The measure, Tasek said during the meeting, was to limit distractions. In giving the directive, Tasek mentioned by name two trustees, Sandy Coffey and Teresa Reck, who were recording the meeting. When Coffey, who was recording the meeting as a correspondent for the Chronicle, questioned the measure, Tasek told Coffey that she would need to choose whether you want to be a trustee or a reporter. Tasek told the Chronicle the day after the meeting that she was instructed by other village officials to give the directive, which she said was allowed by both village ordinance and Robert's Rules of Order. On Friday, December 13th, the Chronicle filed a Freedom of Information request seeking to be provided with a digital copy of the audio recording of the December 11th meeting, plus a copy of a sheet of paper that contained the instructions read by Tasek. Also requested was a copy of the village ordinance stating the rules for recording of the meetings by the public. In response, Tasek provided a copy of the sheet of paper with the handwritten statement she read at the meeting. Tasek was unable to provide the audio recording, however, since the recorder did not fully record that part of the meeting. Tasek was also unable to provide any ordinance related to the recording of meetings by the public, since there is no such ordinance on the book. This was the third request for review filed by the alleging violations of the Open Meeting Act by LODA officials. In November, the Attorney General's office issued a non-binding opinion concluding the board violated the law by including the phrase "closed to the public" on some of its meeting agendas during the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020 and 2021. Also, in April 2023, the board provided the Chronicle with the audio recording of an illegal closed session to settle a separate request for review. If the Attorney General's office determines a violation of the Open Meeting Act occurred, it can issue a binding opinion requiring corrective action or a non-binding opinion recommending such action. And finally on the front page from Roberts, potential rise in water rates to be revisited in February. Village hasn't increased rates annually as IRWA recommends, but it could. Roberts. For the first time in at least 20 years, the village's water system fund finished the last fiscal year in the black with a surplus of $3,437. But that does not mean another rate increase will not occur when the new fiscal year begins in May. The Illinois Rural Water Association recommends an annual water rate increase of 3-5% to stay ahead of inflation and general increased cost, something the village has not done in the past, according to village president Matt Vaughn. The loan the village obtained for new water meters through government capital also requires an annual review of the town's water rates, which the village board began at Monday night's meeting. According to Vaughn, the village billed $115,316 in invoices for water services in 2024, compared with total water-related expenses of $111,879. but the small surplus is still just short of the IRWA's projection that the new water meters installed in summer 2022 would generate an additional $18,000 in annual water revenue. The Village Board will review the potential rate increases again at the February meeting before making a decision, Vaughn said. For perspective, Illinois American Water Company, which owns and operates many municipal water systems, including in Champaign and Urbana, has imposed a 20% rate increase this year by increasing base rates by $24 per month per account, Vaughn noted. In other water-related news from Monday's Village Board meeting, Vaughn said he donated signs to the village that will be used to alert residents when hydrant flushing is occurring and boil orders are issued. Vaughn said he was alerted by several residents about some inaccurate information posted on a local Facebook page about a water main break and subsequent boil-out order that never occurred. Vaughn noted that if residents want facts instead of gossip, they should follow the village's official Facebook page, Village of Roberts Information and Events. Monday night's board meeting, the board voted unanimously to accept a $4,217 bid from RTD Auto Repair of Roberts, the lowest of two received, for the replacement of the transmission of a 2009 Ford F-30 truck owned by the village. The repairs are expected to occur within the next month. The only other bidder was Hicks Motor Sales of Roberts for $6,311. Roberts Gym Board President Jacob Veach said Paige Duval will serve as the gym board's treasurer in addition to her monthly duties as gym schedule coordinator. Veach also said there were about 40 tickets still available for purchase for the Roberts Gym's annual Cash Bash fundraiser to be held Saturday, February 8th at the Roberts Gym. Ordinance Enforcement Officer Ashley Viner said she issued two warnings in the last month, one for a barking dog and the other for a resident burning trash in their yard. Viner also noted that Jeremy Bishop has not paid his fines for loose dogs and that his past due invoice will be turned over to attorney Justin Brunner for illegal action. And finally, Vaughn said he has updated his Freedom of Information Act and Open Meetings Act certifications. Turning to the inside of this week's Ford County Chronicle, we get from the Sibley Village Board, residents to get letter about potential lead and copper in water. Sibley. Water issues were a prime topic again at Monday night's regular Sibley Village Board's meeting. Trustee Keisha Cruz reviewed the letter she is drafting about potential lead or copper being detected in the water of some residences. Cruz emphasized the village water did not have high lead or copper levels, but some residences did. Residential testing is conducted randomly each year by the village as required by environmental regulations. Three residents are chosen per water main. The draft letter must be submitted to and approved by the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, and it must be mailed to residents no later than Thursday, January 30th. Treasurer Joni Brooker told Cruz that she will provide labels and stamps for the mailing. The letter will contain information about how people can test their home water supply and where they can send samples for analysis. Lab costs are the responsibility of the homeowner, along with any remediation or filtration they may choose for their home. Cruz said it is particularly important for those residents who have small children to test their water, as high contaminants in home water can impact health and development. Village President Jim Kearney said he will assist in supplying information for the letter. Cruz advised all board members to be aware of the issues as they receive questions from residents. Next, we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, January 8th. Carol Ann Bray, Danforth. Carol Ann Bray, 83, of Danforth, died Wednesday, January 1st at Prairie View Lutheran Home in Danforth. Burial will be at a later date at Prairie Cemetery in Fenimore. Patsy A. Giroux, Onarga. Patsy A. Giroux, 87, of Watseka, formerly of Onarga, died Sunday, January 5th at the Iroquois Resident Home in Watseka. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, January 14th at the Napradinius Funeral Home in Gilman, and from 10 to 11 a.m. Wednesday, January 15th at the Zion United Church of Christ in Gilman. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, January 15th at the church, with the Reverend Barb Lorbach officiating. Burial will follow at Ridgeland Township Cemetery in Thawville. Memorials may be made to the Watseka Public Library, Onarga Public Library, or the Zion United Church of Christ in Gilman. Alice M. Miller, Springfield. Alice M. Miller, 81, of Springfield, a native of Paxton, died at 9:10 a.m. Friday, December 13th, at Lewis Memorial Christian Village. Private graveside services will be held. Steve Allen Miller, Paxton. Steve Allen Miller, 72, of Paxton, died at 8:15 p.m. Sunday, January 5th, at Accolade Healthcare of Paxton on Pells in Paxton. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at the time of publication. Stephen S. Osborne, Strawn. Stephen S. Osborne, 68, of Strawn, died Saturday, December 28th, at his residence. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, January 11th, at Rosenbaum Funeral Home in Gibson City, followed by a memorial service at 1 p.m. at the funeral home and burial at Strawn Cemetery. Karen M. Small, Gilman. Karen M. Small, 73, of Gilman, died Friday, December 27th, at her home. Memorial services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, February 1st, at the Life Church in Gilman, with the Reverend Jim Harkins officiating. Visitation will be from 9 to 11 a.m. Saturday, February 1st, at the church. Burial will be at St. Mary's Cemetery in Gilman. Memorials may be made to the Iroquois West Booster Club. Donald W. Ward, Bales Lake. Donald Wayne Don Ward, 92, of Bales Lake in rural Lota, died peacefully at his home on Monday, December 30th, surrounded by family. A memorial service was held at 11 a.m. Saturday, January 4th, at the Lota United Methodist Church. Memorials may be made to the Lota United Methodist Church. Now we'll return to the news, to the sports news, with an article by sports editor Andrew Roston, who writes about the University of Illinois football at the Citrus Bowl. Oh, what an experience. Some of us have friends who like to call us while they're on vacation, bragging about the warm weather they're experiencing while we are stuck in chilling temperatures. Those people are jerks, aren't they? Well, after what I've been through this past week, I hope you don't mind if I act like one of those jerks. Prior to last Tuesday's Citrus Bowl game between Illinois and South Carolina, Andre Lowry, brother of an Illinois starting running back and 2022 Gibson City Melvin Sibley graduate Aiden Lowry, asked me how I like the weather. Is this better than the weather at the Monticello Holiday Hoopla, he asked. Indeed it was. The sun was shining, I was wearing a polo shirt and shorts, and it was New Year's Eve. It felt truly great to be back in late September weather again. There were a lot of little things about the Citrus Bowl that made it worth some of the hardships that came before and after the game. As I told my brother prior to leaving on the plane from Champaign, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and it was a fun one. It was fun to be out on the field in warm weather. It was fun to see a couple get married and see the wife wear a Cheez-It ring in lieu of a diamond one. I must admit that as I saw the wedding ceremony, I was wondering if they were going to be serenaded with Cheez-Its instead of rice. As shallow and pandering as such commercialism can be, I guess it's part of our game now. At one point, I could hear Illini fans yelling nuggets as South Carolina's Alex Herrera attempted a second-quarter field goal. For those who have not been to an Illinois football or basketball home game lately, there's a promotion sponsored by McDonald's where, if an opposing place kicker misses a field goal, the fans get free McNuggets. At a basketball game, free McNuggets are given away if a player misses two free throws. Well, Herrera ended up missing the field goal. Even though those fans probably didn't get any free McNuggets, I'm sure it was fun for them. The Citrus Bowl even went out of its way to make the fans feel right at home. There was the Galloping Ghost race held during one of its timeouts, another staple of an Illinois football game. There was another point where unofficial songs played at Illinois and South Carolina stadiums were played at the Citrus Bowl. When South Carolina's song, Hootie and the Blowfishes Hold My Hand, came on, Illini fans drowned out the Gamecocks fans singing the song with booing. South Carolina would then return the favor by booing as Illinois fans danced to FLY's Swag Surfing. I was just thinking it would have been great if each fandom let the other have their fun, but I guess booing is fun in a way. When it was all over, I got to witness something I can't remember ever seeing, the Illini winning a bowl game. Boy, did they have fun with it. There was the sight of Aiden Lowry and company putting their Citrus Bowl championship shirts over their shoulder pads. There were some players tossing Cheez-Its as if they were confetti, with at least one player making a snow angel with the Cheez-Its. These are the kind of things you don't get the privilege of being in person for every day. They're also not things that can wait for you to be ready for them or things that can be attended conveniently. I think it goes without saying that this was the furthest I've ever traveled to cover a sporting event by far. The only other sporting events I've covered in my career were in Indiana. It was pretty expensive to travel there, both in terms of money and health. I don't want to mention names, but I spent almost $90 per night on a hotel that didn't have a working shower and where I did not get much sleep. In fact, after I finished my work at the Citrus Bowl's media workroom, I had a couple of hours to spare before the clock struck midnight to start the year 2025. As I stated earlier, the Citrus Bowl was an experience that I have never experienced before. I said to my brother that it may be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and it was not wasted. I can look back and say that I went for it. If this opportunity is once-in-a-lifetime for me, it was a great one. If nothing else, I enjoyed some warm weather in December. Sometimes it's the little things that get us through our lives. And that's all the time we have for today's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.